This is the Cambridge Marketing Podcast, exploring marketing in the third sector.
What we're actually doing is we're spending a lot of time and a lot of our effort into looking at our data and being more data-driven and looking at who our supporters are. So we're being a lot smarter with how we spend our money, making sure that that small pot of money we use to try and acquire new people, we're doing it in the most cost-effective way.
This is the Cambridge Marketing Podcast.
Hello and welcome. And this week we are in the fascinating world of marketing a charity. And I'm delighted to welcome Simon Judd, who is the head of individual giving and supporter engagement at the East Anglian Air Ambulance Service. Simon, thank you very much for coming on the show. Could we start with what the East Anglian Air Ambulance Service is?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for inviting me. So East Anglian Air Ambulance is a charity that provides life-saving advanced critical care to people across the east of it, well, East Anglia. So we operate across Norfolk, Suffolk, Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire. And what an air ambulance does is it takes the emergency department to the patient. It's not about getting there as quickly as possible and then taking them on to a hospital. It's taking the care to the patient so they've got the best chance of survival. Now, that could be via helicopter, or it could also be by rapid response vehicle, by a car as well. So we have both methods that take it. But the essence is to take that care to the patient on scene to give them the best chance.
OK, so I think, like many people, I'd assumed that it was just an ambulance that worked really quickly, so it was a helicopter. So it's much more than that. So what type of how many staff are you carrying on an air?
So it's not a swoop and scoop, which many people believe. It's about, so effectively, if you think about what happens in an emergency department, that's what we carry on the helicopter and in the cars. So we fly in our helicopter. We have two pilots, and then we have we always have at least one doctor and one critical care paramedic on the heli, and in the cars we will have a doctor and a critical care paramedic go out. Sometimes we'll have three clinical crew. It could be an extra doctor, it could be an extra critical care paramedic. It depends on if they're there on a supervisory role, or if they're doing a fly along or whatever reason that could be. But sometimes we can also have five on as well. And the whole purpose is that it's taking that advanced critical care with them. So where you'd have a land ambulance would have paramedics that would go, and they could do a certain level of treatment. The fact that we've got a doctor on board as well, and the the critical care paramedic as well, because they're actually quite an advanced paramedic, is it's the out of hospital treatment that they're getting. So we can give extra drugs, we can do extra procedures that can't be done by a land ambulance. And then, so it's a case of getting there, doing the best we can for that person at that point, and then get them on to the next place in the most effective way possible.
So just that I'm clear, who calls the air ambulance? When do you get involved?
So it could be a variety of ways. If you dial 999, you go through to the call desk. And then what happens is, on that call desk, is there's also a critical care desk. Now, on that is one of our doctors or one of our paramedics or someone else from one of the other air ambulances in the region. And they're listening out for certain keys, certain cues that would then task it that it needs that extra level of care. So that's one way of doing it. The other way is you will also have, we'll have land ambulances, we'll have police, we'll have fire that will also then call us direct and say, we're at an incident, we need extra help, we need you to come out to do this. We get called out to the top, also the worst 1% of incidents. So it really is the worst instances that are needed. That's where we get brought in with the expertise that we can bring. And that's because we carry the kit and we carry the expertise that's needed in those situations.
So you're clearly a really important part of the NHS. Are you funded by them? Right.
We are not part of the NHS at all. So we are completely funded by public donations. We say we're not regularly, we have no regular funding from the government. It's because every now and then the government may do a specific a grant or a certain pocket of money for air ambulance charities. But air ambulance charities are charities in their own right, and they are 99% funded through the public donations.
So that gives you, as head of supporter engagement and individual giving, a heck of a task. Presumably you have a massive target that you have to meet, otherwise you don't fly.
Yeah, well, so this year our target is £19 million. So we need to make £19 million a year to bring in the service that we can deliver. Yeah. And we have two bases. So we have our headquarters up in Norwich, where we have one helicopter and one rapid response vehicle. And then we also have our base where Anglia 2 is based at Cambridge Airport as well. So there's another helicopter and another rapid response vehicle down there as well.
So the 19 million has to keep those functioning as well as providing everything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a big operation.
Yes. Okay. So... So what fundraising methods do you do? Because, I mean, that's a huge target to have to hit every year.
It is. And as you can imagine, it's very varied. So there's not one single way to get money into a charity. There are so many different ways that you can do it. And also, because there are so many different people that you're trying to reach and there's so many people that your charity affects, that you need to try those different ways to get them in. So... my team, for example, we have the lottery and gaming side of things. So we run a weekly lottery. We do seasonal raffles. We have an app called Match Bingo, which does it's kind of like a bingo game based around football, darts, cricket. And quite excitedly around Eurovision this weekend as well. So keep an eye out for that. We also have in that we have our individual giving side of things. So that's where we have appeals that would go out. We have a regular giving product. And we also have another app that's coming out, which is around about regular giving as well. But also outside of my team, you have community fundraising. So they're the teams that will go out into the community. They will do talks. They will go to your local fete. They'll do bucket collections in shops. So we interact with people that way. We have the events team, and they do our challenge events. So we have like our Only the Brave, which is our flagship event of the year, which is like a big muddy obstacle course in Elverdon. Once a year, we do three treks across different areas of the county. We do virtual events as well. So we're currently, the next one coming up is Together We Ride, where people are encouraged over a month period to different types of riding to raise money. So it could be riding a bike, it could be riding a horse, it could be riding a unicycle, whatever they feel they want to do. And then there's other departments as well. So we have other teams that look after legacies and gifts and wills. We've got teams that are talking to people in corporates. And then you also have the major donor side as well. So there's people that look to get involved in a more one-to-one way as well. And they really speak to the trustees and the get more involved with the larger gifts that can come in as well. So there's so many different ways to get involved in a charity that it's tried to hit as many bases as you can.
See, the one thing in that's a comprehensive list, but there's one thing you described as a regular giving product. And obviously with a marketing hat on, I heard the word product and thought that's a really interesting way of describing it.
I call them products because that's my background and that's how I can understand it as well. So it's easiest for me to segment them that way, to say, okay, we have a lottery product, we have a raffle product, we have a match bingo product, we have a regular giving product. What I mean by regular giving product is all that is people that choose to donate to us on a monthly basis. So they set up a direct debit or they set up a standing order and they regularly give us a donation. Now, we don't call it externally a product because that's not how you would promote that to members of the public. It's a regular donation. However, for us to be able to manage that and make sure that we're giving those supporters the best experience we can give them, we treat it like a product so that we know that they are our customers. They're our supporters in that sense. And we can manage their experience in the best way possible.
Okay, so as we're talking about customer experience, how do you craft an experience for a regular donor?
Oh, many different ways. It depends on the type of regular donor as well. So as you heard in my title, it's individual giving and supporter engagement. So another team that sits under me is the supporter engagement team. So they're the people that you will, whenever anyone phones or emails the charity or interacts with us on social media, there's a team there of people that are trying to deal with their questions, deal with their queries, and get them the help they need as soon as possible. It could be, can you send me out a fundraising pack? Can you send me out a banner? What's happening with this event? And then each of the other areas that we have, so it could be events or it could be all different things, there's little teams in there that are also working directly with those supporters that are part of that event. specifically for our regular givers, it's relatively new for us. I think it's only about 6-7 years old now. And it's all about the supporter journey. And it's about the stewardship and about the interaction with them throughout their time supporting the charity. Now, what we're looking to do as a charity is we're not here to get just that one-off donation. Yes, that's a step into the charity. What enables us to be able to give this service every year is the regular support that people give us. So it's not a case of we're always looking for someone to give hundreds of pounds every month or thousands of pounds every year. People giving £5 a month are just as important to us because they're the people that will stay with us for a long time and they'll come along with that journey with us. And it's those people that also then become ambassadors for us and will then support and talk about us and talk about us to their friends and brings other supporters in as well. And it's that community that you need as a charity to really help you develop.
So what does a regular supporter receive from you? How do you sort of get those messages to them?
It can depend on what their entry point is. So if they come in a certain way and they're interested in doing a challenge event, it could be that they're communicated about the different events that are coming up. We tell them about the other products that we have on the merchandise. But one thing, the main way of communicating with our members is we have a magazine that goes out 3 times a year called Liftoff. Now, the purpose of that is mostly as a communication tool to the supporters. It tells them what's happening with their money. It tells them patient stories, that's the people that we've attended. It tells them about what's going on, what's happening, what the volunteers have been up to, what's happening in their areas. And it really gives them that interaction with the charity. We'll have interviews with the crew members, and it shows more about what we're doing. We also have regular email newsletters that go out to people as well, and we separate them at the moment into 3 different sections. There's a What's New email, which is purely about communication. It's purely about what's happening in the charity. If something's happened with a new medical procedure that we're doing, or a new tool that we're doing, or something's happened with the base, or we're getting new RRVs in, or whatever that could be, that's the communication tool. We then have another one which is based around our events that are coming up, and how people can get involved in the events or how they can share that. And then we have one specifically for our gaming products as well. So obviously that needs to be a very specific audience because we have supporters that are under 18. We can't talk to them about certain products. But also it shows what's up and coming in that area as well. It seems quite strange that you can talk about gaming and gambling in line of charities. When East Anglia Ambulance first started about, I think, 22, 23 years ago now, within the first year, one of the first things they started up was a lottery. And that purely was, it wasn't a case of a way of getting people to gamble. It was a case of, this is a way people can interact on a regular basis. And it was about giving a regular gift, but they could so happen to win some money on the way back. So over the last 20 years, that has grown to become one of the biggest income generators for the charity. And that's one of our most sustained income. So that's one of the, that brings in over 40% of the charity's income, our weekly lottery. The journey that we have for regular givers is all based around stewardship, and it's all based around bringing them into the charity and bringing them in to become part of the crew and part of the team.
I think stewardship's a lovely word for a charity to use. It's about it's very inclusive for your supporters. So do you have sort of target? I mean, you've talked about the type of supporters that, you know, they go for the lottery or whatever. Do your supporters have a particular background or demographic that you see?
There is that, and there is kind of not a standard, but you'll find that most people that support charities financially are of a certain segment, and the majority of them will be 55 plus. They'll be relatively affluent in areas where they might be homeowners, or they're coming up to retirement. Now, that for most charities, that will be the bulk of the people that are your supporters. But that's purely because they're the people with the more disposable income. Mm-hmm. And they're able to do that. It doesn't mean that that's who we target, though. It doesn't mean that that's the only people we speak to. It means they're the people that have possibly had more of experience with us as well, or have actually seen more about what we've done in their area and have often had more interaction with us as well. We also have, if you look at the supporters that get involved in challenge events, for example, will be slightly younger. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a different journey for them, and there'll be a different stewardship for them. We have a different group of supporters that will follow us on social media. And for them, it's not about the financial, but it's about the getting involved on the social side of things. And it's about sharing the stories, and it's about getting involved in that aspect. And they will, and everyone's journey will change as they get involved with the charity and as they find out more about us, and as their experience and knowledge of the charity changes as well. And they'll kind of filter into other groups. And it's a completely movable feast, which is why we always, the most important thing for us is about the supporter journey and the stewardship, because it's about just keeping hold of those people and bringing them on the journey rather than just trying to get them to give us money.
Okay, thank you. So we've talked a lot about when people are already supporters. How do you go about getting people to become supporters? What are the methods that you use to reach them?
There's a massive range of what we do. When you're looking at cold acquisition, one of the most successful still for us is direct mail. We use out-of-home advertising, door drops, partially addressed mail, out-of-home billboards, bus adverts. We've tried direct TV. We do radio advertising. And then even to the base level of banners on the side of roads to get that. A lot of it is brand awareness, but then you'll obviously refine it specifically to the areas for certain types of products again. One of the most successful, though, for us, specifically with the lottery and our regular giving products, is the face-to-face canvassing side of things. And it's a kind of a Marmite type of fundraising. A lot of people, it's the people that you'll come and knock on your door or you'll see at a supermarket. Mm-hmm. And people, they often get a very bad press. And there's some incidences, some very high profile instances in the press the last few months, which can cause a lot of issues. However, we have a very close relationship with our agency that we work with our canvassers. Our canvassers have been working with us for 5, 6, 7 years in certain places. So we bring them into the charity, we bring them into the organisation. They get inducted very well. We speak to them every year. They get refreshed training, they get CPR training, they get DFIB training, and they become our ambassadors out and about. And those people, you love them or hate them, they do an amazing job. And they will bring in over 90% of the new lottery players for our charity. Wow. A lot of people will say that they don't like it and they never do it, but we sign up over 20,000 people a year through that method. And it purely is that one-to-one. And it's that ability that someone will stop and have a chat with them and they'll go, oh, I didn't realise the ambulance did that. I didn't realise it was taking that. I didn't realise it was doing that. Oh, yes, I will sign up. But having that one-to-one ability really helps people to understand what they're doing. We do a lot of digital as well, so we've tried a lot of stuff through social media advertising, through Google advertising, but it's very hard to get get the meaning across, get the why across, when you're just trying to do that one hit, whereas the face-to-face is that aspect where it can really work.
So one of the things that intrigues me with charities at the moment is we're going through an economic crisis, so charities are saying that their amount of money that they're collecting is going down. Obviously, we're not that far out of lockdown, which changed everything for everybody. So can I look at those two? So are you noticing a difficult time with fundraising because of the economic situation?
It is far harder now than it has ever been. Right. This is by far the hardest we have ever found it in fundraising. And that's not just about money. That's about getting volunteers in as well, getting people in to actually help us run the challenge events that we're doing, getting people to come and do the bucket collections or come and do volunteer talks for us, getting people to sign up to come and do the essential work that volunteers do for us as well. It is extremely difficult at the moment. During lockdown, our supporters were extremely loyal. We were so happy and so surprised at how supportive where they were. Everyone was going through such a tough time, but we had so many supporters that would actually phone up and they would increase their donation for us. because they saw how important it was and they saw what was going on. At that time, we weren't doing appeals. So you'll often see charities will do urgent appeals at different times. So and they'll become regular and people will do cash appeals quite a lot. We had never done them before. But obviously, during that time, when PPE was the main issue, we did our first ever appeal. So we sent out a PPE appeal and we had such an amazing response. It was unbelievable. And from that response, it shifted our marketing plans for the next 2 or 3 years, because there's this new avenue, there's this new way people want to interact with us. So we kind of shifted what we did. But now what we're finding is that's now shifting again. And the tried and trusted ways of supporters, of acquisition, of retention, they're just not happening anymore. And what we're finding is more and more people are saying, look, I'm sorry, the way, the length this is going on, they just simply can't afford it. And it's like, and we completely understand that. We can completely understand you can't do that. Do you mind just keeping in touch, being part of our community? Do you mind? And people do still want to. They feel so bad that they just can't support financially the way they used to. So at the moment, it is increasingly difficult. And it's not just that as well. When I just mentioned about the canvassers as well, because of what's happening in the economy, because the way people's behaviours are changing, the way people shop is changing, the way people go to venues is changing, we're really struggling to find places to allow canvassers to go in and talk to people as well. So they're starting to close up on us. But also you've got people like supermarkets where they used to allow us in for free to support us. They're now wanting to charge us a lot of money per week, which doesn't make it viable for us to go in and do that. So there's lots of other challenges that are coming in, and it is just snowballing, and it's been happening ever since the economic crisis has been going along. So, yeah, it's very, very tough for all charities at the moment. It's very tough.
And can you see any light at the end of the tunnel at the moment?
Honest answer, right at this moment, no.
That's probably fair.
there's nothing really that's giving us that chink to say things are going to either go back to how it was or things are on an upward keel in this way. So what we're actually doing is we're spending a lot of our time and a lot of our effort into looking at our data and being more data driven and looking at who our supporters are. So we're being a lot smarter with how we spend our money. So we need to be a lot better at making sure that small pot of money we use to try and acquire new people, we're doing it in the most cost effective way. So that's where a lot of our work is going at the moment, to making sure that we're really streamlining our marketing activity. And then we'll see what happens in the next few months if the economy grows. Now the summer's coming, people are going to, as soon as the sun comes out, people get happier, people go to more events, things like that will start happening as well. And we'll see what happens there. We're hoping with an uptick, it will, and we have a really good summer, that will really help us. But at the moment, when you look at things like the regulars that we need to, the biggest issue for us at the moment is the retention side of it. And the cancellations of our regular givers are increasing. And until people have got more disposable income, charities are going to be affected like that. And it's not to say we completely understand that. And everyone is in that same boat, and we completely see it. So it's not something we're making a complaint about. It's just that's what the reality is. And we need to shift and change to suit that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that still 4 years after the pandemic, the way people have behaved has changed. So we don't go to, we don't shop in the way we did. So you and the impact that has on you, which is probably quite a hidden impact, certainly had never occurred to me that obviously if I'm not going to the supermarket, I'm not bumping into people trying to raise awareness or get me to support a cause. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting. Yeah. Thank you. So can you tell me, we're going to move into a sort of careers discussion now about and I'm going to ask you how people could get a career in charity. But would you mind giving us a little bit about your background? Because you obviously have a marketing background and then moved into fundraising.
I have a very varied background all around the marketing area. So I'm actually a graphic designer to start off with. I studied graphic design at college and at university. I then got involved in, I'm going to talk about the third sector now, or the not-for-profit sector, because I got elected as a sabbatical officer in a student union, and student unions are non-profit organisations. And then I started my career as a marketing, so I was communications officer, then I became marketing manager at the University of London Student Union. I did that for 5 years, and then I kind of wanted to get back into more design, so I ended up kind of falling into having my own design company. So I was a freelance designer, and I did that for like 13 years. But most of my clients were not-for-profits, so they were charities, they were student unions. Then after a while, I got to the point where I didn't want to be... I wanted to be back in office, which sounds strange for a lot of people, but I was getting lonely and I wanted to be back in office, but and I always worked with charities, so I wanted to go back into charities. And I looked for something completely different. And what I was looking for was supporter engagement. And that took me to the Wildlife Trust, which I was there for 2 or 3 years. And then after that, I became the Lottery and Gaming Acquisition Manager at EAAA. And since then, I've progressed through. Now, the big difference that you might have noticed with all of those jobs that I've said is that not many of them actually have the word marketing in them. And that's probably one of the things I'd say about the third sector, not-for-profit, however you want to put it, the charity world, is that there are so many marketing roles which don't actually refer to as marketing. So it's quite hidden. And I think that sometimes it's because the charities don't want to see themselves as marketing to people, or it's because the roles are so varied, the word marketing doesn't really match up with it. So my full experience has always been in design and marketing, but supporter experience and supporter engagement.
And thank you. So if somebody wanted to sort of get into charity marketing, you've come in through quite a circuitous route. How would somebody else sitting there going, I'm getting my marketing qualifications, I really want to go and work in the third sector. Have you any suggestions as to where they could start or some tips they could use?
There are many good charity specific recruitment websites that are out there that you can look for. I'd go out and just look through those and look at what jobs are there. But what I would specifically say is don't get hung up on the word marketing or design, because there are so many transferable skills in charities. Charities are so open to bringing in people from different areas that so many things you may not even realise. So, for example, if you look for the words supporter engagement, or if you look for acquisition, or if you look for retention, those kind of terms are actually marketing roles, but they are specifically looking around, like I've said about the stewardship side of things, or they're talking about acquisition will mean cold acquisition, or it could be direct marketing, it could be digital. And there's obviously a lot more charities as well that are looking down the digital thing. So you'll find more and more digital marketing or digital acquisition roles that are coming up as well. What I would say is look past the job title. Have a look into the job description. It will explain in there what it said, and people will go into more detail about more specific roles. Or if you've got a charity that you are interested in, if you're passionate in, if there is a charity, a local charity that you know that you say, I'd love to know what they're doing or get involved with them somehow, just email them and say, I'm currently doing a marketing qualification. I'd love to get into charities, or I'd love to get into work with your charity. What kind of roles could this work? And they'll put you in touch with the right person. And then you'll get that chat. Charities love to talk to people no matter what. So if you contact them and said, I'm doing digital, what are you doing in this area? You never know. You might get lucky. They might ask you to volunteer for a little bit. That's another amazing route into charities, is volunteering. If you can start volunteering, if you are someone who's doing digital marketing and you say, go up to charity and say, I want to volunteer for you, they will bite your hand off and they will give you so much experience in different types of marketing. You'll have access to event marketing, you'll have access to direct marketing, you'll have access to stewardship, you'll have access to DRTV, you'll have access to digital, you'll have access to Google, to Facebook, so many different areas that you will then develop into and see what's available for you. And it can open up so many doors. It's amazing.
That sounds fantastic. Simon Judd, Head of Individual Giving and Supporter Engagement at East Anglian Air Ambulance, or EAAA as you referred to it. Thank you so much for your time and insight. That's been absolutely amazing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.